It's Thursday, August 8th, 2013, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 25, Dude, Where's My Castle? Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 2 minutes.
Hello, and welcome to Last Time on Video Games. My name is Jeremy.
And I'm Zach.
And I actually got Zach to introduce himself before me this time.
It only took you 5 tries?
Yeah, I think so. This was really easy. I don't know why I didn't think of just pointing at him before.
Why did you want to go last?
Just to mix up the order. Because we always do it in the same order, except that one time where I was like, I don't know.
So you wanted to screw with protocol?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Yep.
Tyler hates protocol, Tyler smash.
Why do you hate protocol? You're the programmer. That's all you follow protocols.
I know, but I thrive on chaos. So I create order out of the chaos. So if I have more chaos to work with, that means I can do a little more organizing.
Chaos is a ladder, and all that matters is the climb.
Yeah, actually, I fully agree with that statement. Like I told you, I'm chaotic neutral, maybe chaotic good at best.
Speaking of chaotic good, you said you had an announcement. Do you want to save that for after you tell us what you've been playing, or?
No, this can go first. It's actually a pretty short announcement, despite how much I've been talking about it. So, Dan...
You suck.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, no, it's still pretty exciting, just only for us and maybe this one guy. So, Dan, okay, so he has a podcatcher, and it kind of sucks, and apparently he recently went on a binge of our episodes and was complaining about being behind. I'm like, dude, iTunes catches it, and he's like, yeah, I know, but I follow you on Google Plus now. I'm like, sweet. So, and we have like 2 more Twitter followers, even though we haven't posted anything on there for a while. But all this got me thinking, yeah, I haven't checked the iTunes reviews for a while.
So, oh, do we get iTunes reviews?
Do we have an iTunes?
We have an iTunes review from one guy whose name is New to Smartphones and then a stream of random numbers I can't remember. And he gave us a 5-star review and very good recommendation.
Oh my god.
And he's also a game developer. So, hey, New to Smartphones, I'm also a game developer and, you know, thanks for listening and stuff.
Hey, New to Smartphones, you are my favorite game developer after Jick from Kingdom of Loathing.
What about me?
You get a respectable third, so okay. You still get to be on the platform. You're not the guy who's sadly hanging his head. I don't know who that would be. Notch, maybe?
We're Last Time on Video Games, and you are our favorite game developer outside of our table of guys.
Yeah. So, you know, random shout out to the one guy who left us an iTunes review. Unfortunately, they don't leave dates or allow us to comment back on it. So I have no idea when this happened, and I can't reply to it. But...
Well, aren't we doing that right now?
Well, okay, yeah, I guess that's true. If you're still listening... You're awesome, and you can totally send us an email and, you know, spread the word and stuff. So, yeah, that's that. That was my really exciting thing. We got an iTunes review, and it was 5 stars, so.
That was well worth the hype you were...
I know, right?
Speaking of hype, what have you been playing, Tyler?
You know, not really a whole lot. I've been really bloody busy this week, although lots of Faster Than Light, and I came up with an idea recently that I stuck on the Twitter account, actually, was, what if Faster Than Light was a mobile game on tablets? It already has automatic pause, and it's all basically mouse-controlled anyway, so you might as well just drag it with your finger. I know you guys haven't played it, but it would totally be a good mobile game.
It would be like XCOM. That would be... Oh, wait, they already did that.
Yeah.
Who honestly has a tablet?
Besides Zach.
Which is sitting at the table. The tablet is sitting at the table, in addition to your Android.
And your DS?
And the DS. Yeah, you have a lot of touchscreen stuff there, buddy. So...
I was going to do something with it on the way down here and just didn't.
Although, if you notice, your little green light on the DS is lit up, which means...
I know, there's probably another random person appeared on my Fire Emblem map.
Yep, and I get another thing for save me. So, anyway, yeah, I've been playing some Faster Than Light, a little bit of Animal Crossing, and I think that might be it. A little bit more Melee, but...
Did you beat Faster Than Light yet?
Define beat.
There is a boss.
There is a boss. I have yet to manage to beat him. I got really close one time and was chatting with Ed over Hangouts, and he wanted to screen share the final boss, and so I did. He's like, okay, now you want to do this and this, and make sure to take that one missile guy out, and I got past its first form. It has multiple forms, by the way. And I got past its first form, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm kicking this thing's ass. It did like 2 damage out of the 30 that I have on my ship. And the second form was like, you know, less capacity. I'm like, I can beat this, so I used my cloaking early to let my weapons charge up. And then my cloaking wore off, and it sent out like 50 million drones that auto-fired my ship to death. And I didn't know it was going to do that, so I was completely unprepared, and my ship got totally destroyed in like the space of 30 seconds, even though I took like no damage during its first form. I blame Ed, because he forgot to tell me about it.
So, you were fighting a carrier.
Yeah, it's basically a carrier. Well, the first form is just like this giant-ass capital ship with a bunch of weapons. but you blow two of the weapons off after the first form, and then it becomes a carrier. And then after you beat that form, I think it's basically the exact same thing as your ship. So it's a fun game. I highly recommend picking it up if you can spare the $2 on Steam. So
just Faster Than Light and old Animal Crossing?
Yeah, Animal Crossing City Folk, not New Leaf. I've been exhorted by multiple people at this point to get New Leaf, and I kind of want it. I went to Target last night, and there are a remarkably large number of decent 3DS games currently available in stores. I was surprised.
The library really expanded this year.
Yeah, well, there's, like, Awakening. X and Y is coming out in October. That's exciting.
There's one I've heard decent things about is, Shin Megami Tensei 4.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be pretty good.
That's actually, I forget who told me about it. It might have been Ed. If you buy Shinten 4 and Awakening, you get a $30 rebate. So you basically pay for one of them.
Unfortunately, I've already got Awakening.
No, I think it's just if you own both in a certain time period. Like,
I don't
if you buy...
think I can register it, though.
Yeah, totally. Just go get a Club Nintendo account, fool. Also, it's registered to your DS. So, yeah.
Huh.
Right. Anyway, so...
So that's a perfect transition to what Zach's been playing.
Yeah, Zach, what have you been playing since you brought your DS with Awakening on it?
I bring that with me in case we ever do something like Melee and I get tired of it faster than you guys, so I have something to do.
I like getting the Street Pass things, which is why I forced you to create a Street Pass account.
Well, that's also, I know you enjoy getting those, so I bring it, no skin off my back, I'm going to take it home anyway. I've been playing Awakening, been playing a lot more XCOM than normal. Neither of you are dead yet, by the way.
Wow.
Who is dead?
I've been, huh?
Who is dead?
A whole bunch of random people. I have been having people drop like flies. Like, I have so many squaddies and rookies in my, because they just got flanked and killed instantly.
But we're genre savvy.
Yeah.
Although, I'm going to die because I'm going to put on a seatbelt when we hide in a car. That's a Venture Brothers reference.
Wait, dangerously genre savvy? Is that a TV trope?
Both of them are.
Okay.
We're not dangerously genre savvy.
We're not actually causing problems by knowing too much about the genre?
We're just surviving.
Okay.
Well, you're kind of a secondary thing, too. You don't show up as often as most of the others do, because I don't like having multiple snipers, if I can help it.
Oh, and we ended up being snipers?
I also have a metric ton of snipers this time. Normally, I might get like 1, 2, maybe 3 snipers just being promoted. This time, I've got like 10.
Can you think of a real-world system where that would happen? Like, you're training really hard to be like a programmer or something, and then all of a sudden... Oh, you're an accountant. Wait, what? What happened?
That's like one of my only problems with the game is that the promotions are entirely random.
I believe the narrative justification is they're all like rookies and they show an aptitude for X, so that's what they get trained as.
But even that's not what they're doing half the time.
Well, maybe he just had a really good shot and it looked like it would have been good if it was with a sniper rifle too. Or maybe his outfit just has a ton of sniper rifles, so they need guys that can be trained in shooting them.
Yeah, that's like one of my only problems, is that the promotions are random for guys, so you'll end up with a dearth of other units that you might need later.
So I would prefer they have an aptitude for a certain class, and you can choose to promote them to that class later, but I don't know.
Well, it'd be nice to just select which one you could promote them to.
Yeah, but I feel like that gives you too much control. I don't know. I've never even played XCOM, although from everything I've heard, I would like it, so...
Was it not on sale for the Steam sale?
It might have been. I actually really didn't buy a whole lot on the Steam sale. I got Dax. I don't know if he listens to the show, but Dax got me 2 games. So, and I haven't played either of them yet, but...
Well, if you had a 360, I'd force you to borrow it from me. But alas.
Oh no, my 360 is dead.
It's been dead for a while.
Yeah, actually I'm kind of sad that my 360 was dead, because I actually have some games that I like on the 360, but I can't play them. So.
You know, you can buy one for cheap.
Well, define cheap. Over $100?
I think they're, like, the original ones that I have. I think those go for $100.
That's barely pushing it. That's really the only thing preventing me from buying a Wii U right now, is I'm a cheap bastard. Although I get paid for the first time this Friday, which will have been last Friday. Well, actually 2 Fridays ago by the time this episode drops.
Well, it's got more... On the 360, you got a lot of good games and stuff. And you can always borrow crap from me. I've got... most of the best games on the console.
And as for the Wii U, its library is still really lacking. Although I'm super, super excited to play Scribblenauts Unmasked, because it has 4 different versions of Aquaman you can summon. And Arm Fall Off Boy. Chris Sims, who writes a column called Bizarro Back Issues for Comics Alliance, whose job is to read old, obscure DC comics, tried to stump it and could not. At Comic-Con, he said if he had an unlimited time instead of 30 minutes, he probably would have found someone, but Arm Fall Off Boy was in there.
That sounds pretty awesome. Is Scribble Knots on Mass basically a superhero
DC.
Version? DC specifically?
Yeah.
Arm Fall Off Boy? That sounds like a really limited use power.
Well, he was one of the rejects of the Legion of Superheroes. His arms could fall off and he could reattach them, so he would take his arm off and beat people with it.
That does sound pretty awesome.
But they're like, no, that power sucks, go away.
To be fair, that power does kind of suck. Though it does work well if you need to grab something off the top shelf.
To be fair, the Justice League cartoon let in the guy who could shoot laser pistols well. Like, he didn't even have superpowers.
Justice League also has Batman.
Yeah, the Justice League is more open to people without powers than the Legion. The Legion are basically a bunch of high school assholes with a club who only let people in they think are cool. And they have rules like, you have to have powers, but we let Karate Kid in, even though he just knows karate, because he's so good at karate. And also, no two people can have the same power, except for Lightning Lass and Lightning Lad, but they're brother and sister, and one of them was dead for a while.
You know who they would totally let in? Rexplode, because he has an awesome name.
He does. Anything else, Zach, before we continue about my
adventures in gaming?
Not that I can think of. I had one that I spent like 20 minutes. I've spent most of the time, it felt like, trying to troubleshoot the damn thing, and it didn't work, so I just stopped.
Oh? I'm curious. What was it?
I was trying to get The Sims 2 to work on my laptop, but it kept having a fatal error and crashing. So
that's
unfortunate. I just said, you know what?
Say, if you care at all, I could probably solve that for you, but...
I looked everywhere I could think of to find it, and it just kept having the same thing, so I'm just like...
But I can read stack traces and make sense of them. It's a power I have.
Maybe, I'll think about it. Because I do enjoy that game, it's just... I think it works on my other computer, I might just set that thing up and use it.
Yeah, I'm wondering what that would be. I'm actually wondering if it's the integrated graphics card, because...
I think that might be the problem.
Yeah, goddamn people, stop choosing a goddamn chipset that is... dependent on a certain version of DirectX. Your lack of laptop support, random game developers who choose not to support laptop graphics cards, is killing me.
Well, in this case, you know, the time frame has passed, so it might just be because it's at like DirectX 10 or something like that.
And
EA
it is kind
games,
of an older game.
They have Sims 3 out.
Indeed. Well, I think I told you I bought Heroes of Might and Magic 6, which I read everything on the internet said, if you liked Heroes of Might and Magic 3 and didn't like the other ones, you will love this one. I'm like, freaking amazing. So I bought two copies of it, and neither of the computers I bought it for can run it.
Ah, that sucks.
Granted, it was $10 a piece, so I'm not out that much, but still.
I just enjoyed the game, but like I said, I think my other computer might be able to run it, and the next computer I buy will probably be a desktop.
Yeah, I'm actually looking into getting a desktop relatively soon.
Once I get a full-fledged job, I'll probably have the desktop. I'll keep my laptop for using elsewhere, and I might get a notebook, you know, the little tiny ones.
A netbook?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Honestly, given the choice between a tablet and a netbook, I would probably just get a tablet.
Well, actually, that's probably a good point. I'd probably just get a keyboard, would probably be cheaper than buying a full-fledged netbook.
Oh, sorry to segue again from your next games.
It's fine.
A while ago, Alex's uncle was out here, and he totally had one of those laser keyboards. So I got to finally play with one of them. They project a laser image of a keyboard onto a surface. And
that sounds like the worst possible thing.
Yes,
I need tactile feedback. I need it.
It's not super accurate.
Well, that sounds super sci-fi, but I wouldn't want one. I'm like Jeremy. I like having tactile feedback when I'm typing. Trying to type on my tablet is a pain in the butt.
That's actually, okay, so probably none of us can afford this right now. But they actually make one that the screen will actually pop up and give you actual buttons to press on them. And then when you're not using the keyboard anymore, the screen goes back down. Does that make any sense describing it?
It does.
No.
It doesn't make sense to make that. Because why wouldn't you just make a tactile keyboard?
Because you don't have space on the device for a keyboard.
Okay, fair enough.
That's actually my first Droid had a slide-out keyboard, and I don't know why they didn't put that on any of the other ones, because that was like the best thing ever. Anyway, so yeah, I played with a laser keyboard. I always thought they were cool, and turns out they're kind of cool, but not very accurate.
Well, now I suppose we should probably let Jeremy speak, shouldn't we?
Yeah, I'm done interrupting you now.
Cool. I've played a lot of video games, actually. Kingdom of Loathing, I finished my Bees Hate You run, and I did a Way of the Surprising Fist run.
Well, what is the limitation in that, out of curiosity?
No weapons, you only get 10% of meat, which is the currency, and all the things that give you meat other than combat, you instead choose to donate it to charity. and I think there's something else in it too, but you get all these new martial arts moves as techniques.
Awesome.
Like Drunken Baby Style and Hadouken.
Nice.
The Stink Palm, which is stench damage.
I'd hate to think how you come about using that.
Bum cheeks help resist stink damage, so...
You can craft two of them into an ass hat, which reduces even more stench damage.
Listeners, you can't see me, but I am face-palming right now.
Oh, God. Kingdom of Loathing is so great. If you enjoy that type of humor, play Kingdom of Loathing. It'll eat up about a week.
Is it still browser-based like it was originally?
Yeah. They refused to change it.
Honestly, I don't see why they would ever make it not browser-based. But
it's problematic on phones, apparently, because of the way in which it's browser-based. But
yeah, well, it was also made in the 90s, wasn't it?
Early 2000s.
So
yeah, we were playing it in high school.
We have changed how we do stuff on the web a lot in the last decade. So I could see why that would be problematic.
We've changed the way we do things on the web drastically in the last 5 years.
I don't know that that's really true. I think open source code libraries, like open APIs like Google and Twitter and stuff sponsor, have really shifted things towards a REST-based interface more, but I don't think that's really changed all that much. And you guys have no idea what that means, so it doesn't really matter.
Somebody does, and they're listening to this podcast. Hi, somebody. Leave a comment.
Be the second person we give a shout-out to.
I've also been playing a bunch of stuff on my Wii U because I can't sleep. So Mega Man X, I finished that playthrough I've started. It's almost like a lullaby for me now. I just play some Mega Man X. I finished my Mega Man 2 difficult run, and I liked it a lot more on the hard difficulty.
Yeah, I could see that. I've actually played a little bit more Mega Man 2. I completely forgot about that. And Zelda, actually, I played some of.
Original?
No, sorry, not the original. The Oracles. I'm currently playing through Ages still, and I played a little bit of that this week. I completely forgot.
I'm certain I played something else that was a 2D side. Oh, I just played a lot of The Assignment. That's what I'm thinking of. I played a little bit more Dwarf Fortress, because I want to before I start student teaching and don't have the time to. I started a new fortress. This one has no coal, but a ton of iron.
So you decided not to try and reclaim your old one?
I did, but the goblins were still there, and there was a glitch where sometimes they'll become friendly. So there are 80 goblins in my base, and they are friendly until you get attacked by goblins again, at which point they immediately turn on you and are in your base. And I was like, you're not going to deal with this with 3 axemen I brought. I've been playing a little bit of Red Dead, a bunch of Fortune Street with my brother, and a game called Save the Date. Have you heard of this?
I have not heard of this.
It's free. You should play it.
It rings a bell.
I would like you to play it, but I don't think you'll like it.
He's pointing at me first and then Zach, by the way.
What is it?
It's pretty pretentious, and I heard about it on a podcast, and I was kind of disappointed with how much I knew about it. So I don't know how much I should say. It's kind of a dating simulator, but the way in which you progress is really interesting. I guess the main mechanic for it. The plot is you're trying to have a date not go horribly wrong.
Okay.
I don't know how much more I should say. You should both play it.
Is this an arcade thing?
It's free. You do have to download it and install it. But just type in Save the Date game. It'll probably be in our show notes. You should be able to comprehensively play it in an hour.
Okay, so it's kind of the level of complexity that most Flash games tend to be.
A little bit more than that, but about a Flash game, yeah.
Oh no, I played some Flash games that have taken me like 20 hours, so...
It's
there's some
definitely
pretty decent
a
ones.
Game about video games at its heart.
Awesome. Oh, speaking
I still
of
need
which,
to get State of Decay. I've been meaning to get some Microsoft points and play that.
So I know you guys don't lurk Newgrounds nearly as much as I do, but have you ever played Epic Battle Fantasy?
Nope.
No. It's by a guy, his screen name is Matt Like Swords. And he...
I like this guy.
Yeah, he has several recurring characters, and one of his main characters is Matt. He has swords. But he has made several of these that first started out as an endless series of random encounters, then a little bit of a story with random encounters, and then like an actual game, and now he's on Epic Battle Fantasy IV. It's a full-fledged RPG that takes you about 30 hours, and it's amazing.
Wow, that's pretty impressive for Flash.
Yeah, and it supports 3 save files off of 1 cookie, so it's pretty freaking awesome.
That's not uncommon now. I played a game that supported 10 save files on 1 cookie.
So, yeah, Flash games are pretty awesome. Oh, man, The Last Stand. You guys, I should link some of these.
GemCraft is still my favorite Flash game. Original?
Alex just went back and started GemCraft Zero again. Apparently, they keep pushing back the release of the next one, so they're now like 3 months overdue for their next release.
How many are there? I just played the original. I played a little bit of Zero, but... didn't like it as much.
I think there is the original Labyrinth and Zero, and they're currently working on 2.
Isn't GemCraft just some kind of color matching game?
No.
Tower defense. It's got some color matching elements in that
kind
each
of.
Color of gem has a special attribute. Like, I think red is AoE.
Am I thinking Bejeweled?
I think you are thinking of Bejeweled.
Yeah. Bejeweled is definitely a color matching gem game.
But okay, yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
And if you combine two of the same color, it just gets more powerful. If you combine two of different colors, they get both abilities, but the abilities atrophy.
So
the more you mix in, the more the abilities get weaker.
So like in the original, red is splash and green is poison, so a red-green gem that gets combined that way will do splash poison damage.
But it won't do as much splash or poison damage.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome, although you can also put in skills and make your dual color gems more powerful than your single color gems.
It also has, I guess, a WoW-style talent tree that you level up as you play through levels.
The talent tree gets much more, I guess, much better built by the third game, but the third game is also way harder to exploit reliably. The first game, you can exploit the hell out of it, but the third game is balanced, finally. So.
Well, yeah, balance is better. Exploiting anything is just obnoxious. If you want to play the game, you shouldn't be exploiting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of feel differently, but the first one is a little hard to exploit in that you don't control what color gems you summon.
You don't. You totally do by Labyrinth. Well, and Zero, rather. I don't know if you do in Labyrinth, but
totally forgot I was playing World at War this week.
World. Oh.
I should say, I was playing Nazi Zombies. It happens to be attached to World at War.
Oh, okay. So this is completely random, and I haven't played it, but this sounded pretty awesome. There is a game called Space Marine Shooter that is $10 on Steam, and it's a first-person shooter that is based... Oh, no. It sounds pretty awesome. It's basically just like if Counter-Strike was made in modern days, but not.
I can't remember the name of this game now, but someone made a game. It was a one-week challenge. Can you make a FPS in 1 week?
Oh, like a Ludum Dare, kind of?
Yeah.
But not.
So the graphics are terrible. You're a floating gun. But
like every 90s shooter.
But the conceit is that the guns are super realistic, so you don't have a reload button. You have a remove magazine button, a put the gun on your hip because you need two hands to, and then a put bullet in magazine.
What if you just want to drop your magazine and slap a new one in?
I think you can, but...
Only if you have more magazines laying around?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's actually kind of... It reminds me a little bit of that Burning Wheel. The combat system in Burning Wheel for... originally, when you told it to us with the bows, you needed... You know, knock arrow, pull string, let go of string, fire arrow kind of thing. You needed like 8 actions to actually accomplish it.
Anymore, if I play a game that doesn't have ammo conservation that just automatically does that stuff, it pisses me off. But none of them were as
Doom, though.
None of them were as detailed as what you're describing, which sounds pretty awesome. So.
What exactly do you mean ammo conservation? Like,
so in most modern shooters, when you reload a gun, if you only are missing one shot, you don't waste all the rest of the rounds in that magazine. You just take one round out of your imaginary stash, and it immediately goes into the new magazine.
Yeah, I kind of liked that in Battlefield, when if you reloaded, you lost
out.
The whole thing.
Well, and I didn't know that the first time I played Battlefield, so I found myself out of ammo really quickly, because I neurotically reload in modern shooters.
Yeah, so. Gee, I wonder why you do that.
Well, because I oftentimes find myself where I need one bullet to take some guy out, but then I want to reload because the next time I'm going to go through the entire goddamn magazine. So.
Yeah, couldn't possibly be because of somebody you know. Instilling a neurotic...
No, I did this before I started playing shooters with you, even. So.
Cause I definitely got it from Zach.
I do that all the time. It's like, all right, time to reload. You only fired one shot. I'm reloading.
Whatever that game's called, we'll put it in the show notes. I can't remember for the life of me. It started with an R. I want to say Revolver, but I know that's not right.
It's on Steam?
No. The one I was talking about was on Steam. That's
Well, everything's
Space
on
Marine
Steam,
shooter.
Apparently.
Well,
most
yeah.
things.
I prefer to buy games if I can, not through Steam, because then...
The developers get a bigger chunk?
Yeah, pretty much.
I prefer to buy hard copies, but as we've established, I'm weird.
I can see the advantage of having a hard copy if you don't have a good backup system, but Steam has an awesome backup system, so...
Well, at the very least, if I have a hard copy, if it's not a very good game, I can throw it at somebody.
Well, we were talking about the aerodynamics of throwing N64 cartridges a while back, so...
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
Speaking of games that aren't very good... It's sequel month here on Last Time on Video Games. You can tell from all the sequels I was playing, right? So we wanted to go through what our best sequel is. But since we're playing Castlevania 2 this week, I decided instead we do what is your least favorite sequel. And since I think we all know, Zach, why don't you start us off?
This Halo 2.
Surprising everyone.
Yeah, I know. Really?
Yeah, well.
You think?
I never really played Halo 2, but from what I've heard, your opinion is well... validated.
Well, in one of those funny things, I look back on that game, and when I bought it, as Jeremy will back me up, I did not like it from basically day one when I started playing. I'm like, this is not a very good game. The only reason I got Halo 3 was because I had enough trust from how good Halo 1 was that I was willing to give it a shot.
Do games from series that aren't necessarily direct sequels count, like Final Fantasy?
I'm wondering if they do or not. Okay. Because one of the ones I thought of is in that way. But what are you going to say?
I was going to say FF8 is pretty high on my list.
Really? I like FF8. It's not great, but I like it.
I liked it until the second disc. Then they decided to throw plot out the window, but... No, actually, I think my biggest disappointment in a sequel was Chrono Cross.
Oh, I've never played Chrono Cross, but I heard from you that it's terrible.
No, it's not terrible. I never meant to give the impression that it's terrible. It is just not a sequel to Chrono Trigger, which is what I was expecting. It's a pretty decent RPG in its own right.
Mass Effect 3.
Yeah, I never played Mass Effect 3. I heard a lot of people weren't happy with the ending.
Well, in my opinion, the ending, I don't care about all that. It was everything else that they did to the game that really ruined it for me.
Also, Street Fighter 4.
Really? I like Street Fighter 4.
What's wrong with Street Fighter 4?
It's an okay game. I feel like Street Fighter 3 was way better.
Really?
So, yeah.
Street Fighter 4 is the one on the 360, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I wanted to make sure I had that right before I made myself sound like a massive idiot.
The vast majority of my play experience with this was on the PC version, which was, I feel, kind of neutered. Oh no, I really like Street Fighter Third Strike, and Street Fighter 4 was not doing it for me. Although the unblockable thing that they added was something that I feel has been lacking in every 2D fighter except Gundam Battle Assault, so...
Mine going to the Mass Effect 3 thing is sort of an expansion pack. Dragon Age Awakening, I hate so much.
That's an expansion pack, it's not a sequel.
And I hate Dragon Age 2 too, but I never played it, so can't really say it. So if that can't count, then I'm going to have to go to Final Fantasy X-2. The story is crap, they ruined the awesome battle system from Final Fantasy X. The leveling up in Dress Spheres is not bad. It's very similar to Tactics, which I love.
And 5, which is also awesome.
I haven't played 5, I should. But I just don't like that game.
I kind of enjoyed it, which is weird for me, because normally I am very much on the side of, where am I supposed to be going, who am I supposed to shoot, and when is it supposed to happen? Not really the kind of happier...
Also, the sexualization of it I found really awkward, because the English version is a little bit edited, but it's still a... 12-year-old girl running around in nothing but a bikini top and...
Oh, what, Riku? She's like 16.
Maybe? And
wasn't she doing that in the... Yeah. Wasn't it worse than 10?
Excuse me, she was older than me when the game came out, so I'm allowed to be attracted to her.
No, it's, she's worse than 10 too in that way. No,
and she's just got a yellow bikini. That's all. It barely covers anything.
Honestly, I tend to agree. I think that's actually one of the things that I did. And Yuna seems to be acting way out of character
in
that.
Yeah, and Pain is a terrible character.
Eh, I don't feel strongly one way or the other.
And LeBlanc is just a terrible Team Rocket ripoff.
I think Zach and I are the dissenting opinions against the entire internet on this, because I actually like this game because it was trying to make a Final Fantasy game that was light and happy again, which hasn't happened since, like...
Oh, I'm not disagreeing with the internet. It's bad.
No, it's definitely
I
bad.
I enjoyed it, is the difference.
It's a terrible game, but I wish more games had that tone to it. Also, the leveling system was cool, but... Although, Spoonie hated the leveling system because it encouraged grinding, so...
First part of that
Spoonie
might have...
doesn't like the leveling system in 10. Screw him. The Spirit Grid is great.
Yeah, the Spirit Grid is pretty great.
It might have just been because of the fact that I got the game for free.
Yeah,
I was buying other games, and it's like, buy 2, get 2 free. I'm like, okay, I need to find another game I can get for free.
I would have never bought it of my own accord. I also got it for free, along with a strategy guide from one of my dad's coworkers at one point.
See, I bought it
that's
shortly
awkward.
After release.
I remember you did. Tyler, I think we can both agree on one thing. It was well worth the money we paid for it.
Yes, it was. I got at least 5 hours of enjoyment out of this free game. So,
I played this game for 5.5 hours. It was $5, though.
Yeah. Is it worth about $1 an hour?
Yeah, probably. Castlevania 2 is what we're talking about. This is a terrible game. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Okay. So I will freely admit I did not play nearly as much of this game as I probably should have for recording an episode about it. But it was not horrible. I did complain vociferously the first time I tried to play it. But on my second playthrough, it's not the worst game I've ever played. I had fun with it, but I felt like I should have more fun given the concept.
I don't know if I'd say it's the worst game I've ever played, because I might have blanked out the worst game I've ever played, but it was pretty far... No, wait. It was not the worst game I've ever played, because I played Ghosts and Goblins.
You've played games for this podcast, and now you have things to compare it to that are actually terrible.
Anyway, I'm with Tyler. I didn't play it as much as I probably should have.
Slackers!
I don't know why this week I didn't do much of anything.
I did a lot of everything.
But
unfortunately,
it was...
very little was games.
The systems were functional, but it lacked something to draw me in and make me want to play it.
My biggest thing was a lack of direction, actually.
I think that's why I didn't have any reason. It didn't give me a reason to want to keep going.
That is the biggest problem with the game. From the moment I loaded, I was like, where the f*** do I go? And I immediately went through a walkthrough. When I played Metroid, I felt that was a major mistake and it really ruined the fun of the game. I could not have played this game without a walkthrough.
You know, no. Jeremy, I gotta say, I enjoyed how you put it. I think it was last week we were talking about this. You load up the game, you're like, I don't know where the f*** I'm supposed to go. Oh, wait, yes, I do. Game facts!
Yep, I did say that.
So, really quickly, the story of this game is you're apparently cursed from being wounded in the fight with Dracula in the first game, and have to go back to Transylvania to collect Dracula's body parts and burn them to remove the curse.
Yep.
It's a good night for a curse.
It's a terrible night.
Terrible night to have a curse. Sorry, my bad.
Every night is a terrible night to give a curse.
Depends on what kind of curse it is.
Really briefly, let's run down the mechanics. Basically, you have the exact same controls from Castlevania, except now you're exploring an environment instead of going through dungeon levels.
It's the same controls, but it feels different in a lot of ways. There are no candles to whip.
Yeah.
And you don't have power-ups the same way you did in the first one.
You have to buy items, but then you get to use them indefinitely, right?
Yes. Two items have limited use. Garlic, which you can use it as a weapon. Its only real use is you can trade it for some items. And then laurels, which are invincibility for like 10 seconds,
okay,
are also limited.
I have to ask because I didn't get very far. Is there a health recovery item?
No. The only way to recover health is to go to the church.
Seems kind of like an oversight to me, but...
I think that encourages quickly getting really good at the platforming parts so that you can get to town quicker, but...
Also, compared to Castlevania 1, where the only way to heal was hidden wall chicken.
Yeah. Now that I'm thinking about it, my problem with that is that this game still has insta-death, but I don't think insta-death should be a thing in this game.
I can see that kind of. At the beginning of the game, there's this bridge with water under it. That's one of the most platforming intense sections of the game.
And mermen are like popping up everywhere.
Once
you know what's going on there, it's not a problem, but you don't at first.
I don't think there should be insta-death in a game this focused on exploration. Like, imagine if Metroid had insta-death. The hell.
That's true, I didn't think about that. Metroid has no instant death, huh?
No, I think I've said it in the past, but I don't think any game that uses a health bar system should have insta-death in it.
Or mandatory health drain like freaking Comic Zone.
I agree with mandatory health drain. I don't think I agree with instant death. I think it's okay to have both some things that do more damage than others, and thus it's okay if some things do as much damage as your life bar.
Say, I'm almost alright with it in Mega Man games, but I really don't think that you should ever have instant death in a game where you have health. That's stupid. That defeats the purpose of having health.
Especially when instant death is gonna be the most prominent way you die.
Well, in Super Mario Bros., it is, and, you know, you only have a health bar, and that if you have a power-up, you get one more hit. But you still mostly die in Mario from falling in pits, and I think that's perfectly acceptable.
Mario have a health bar?
Not a bar, but
exactly my point.
Okay, so in Mario, when you get hit, you die, unless you have a power-up, in which case you lose the power-up. It's not that you have health, it's that you have extra abilities and you lose them. You take penalties for losing them. In, like, Mega Man, you just lose health. Nothing bad happens. That's it.
Going back to Castlevania the original, there are a ton of pits you fall in and die,
you have no health bar. No, you don't.
Yeah, you do.
In the original Castlevania?
You totally have a health bar.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, apparently it's been too long since I played Castlevania.
But you mostly die because you go flying back when you're hit and there's a pit there, goddammit, Dracula.
Okay, I think maybe it's not the health bar, but it's games that are heavily mechanics-focused based on platforming and jumping, basically, are okay to have insta-death, but this is not a game based on platforming and jumping.
Okay, that's fair.
This is an exploration-focused game.
But I think Mega Man gets away with it's got a platforming focus.
Yeah, Mega Man has a platforming focus, which
is
why
I'm... original Castlevania, but I will agree this one should not.
I still think... I mean, falling down a pit could cause massive damage, but I don't think... it should instantly kill you.
So are you a fan of, like, in The Legend of Zelda, where you fall down a pit and you lose a health, but you respawn outside of the pit?
I tend to prefer that method, but...
Is that what happens in Ocarina?
Yeah, yeah. Ocarina, then into the past.
I would much... ones. Yeah, because it gives you another crack at it. You do take a penalty, but it isn't so much of a violent penalty that it feels sometimes, especially if it happens a lot, that the developer is dancing on your character's grave.
So, and I think it depends on how easy it is to avoid pits. Like in Zelda games in general, it's pretty easy to not be paying as much attention as you should and fall down a pit. But they don't penalize you harshly. In like Castlevania, if you fall down a pit, it's usually your own fault. So I feel it's okay to penalize you for doing that. Also, the economy of retries in the original Castlevania, pretty lenient.
Not as lenient as this game.
Yeah, you wanted to talk about what happens when you die in this.
You immediately respawn where you died, or in front of the pit you died in.
Which is kind of odd. I don't know that I've ever played a game that does
that. If I remember correctly, that actually got me killed.
I don't think that ever got me killed. Well, I definitely made a mistake where I respawned and hit forward again. I'm like, there's a pit there. Boom.
There was one moment where I was in water because apparently your guy can't go in water. And I was bleeding. I was
that's the
dying,
curse.
And I had another one of those head things chasing me. And because of the fact that where it was, I couldn't get away from it because my guy's a pansy ass and can't run. But he also,
that's because
the thing
curse
was right next to me. So I couldn't move very fast. And I was basically taking double damage the entire time. And I just died, like, I died, I think, twice in the span of crossing a 10, like, foot river.
That is an interesting thing. When I died in this game, my deaths always came back to back. I would go a really long time without dying, and then I'd get to a part and die a bunch.
I find I do that in most games, actually, as I have a hot streak, and then when I lose it, I lose it pretty hard.
That's fairly common for me as well, especially, I mean, in basically any game that I play, for fun, at least. I mean, I'll have a great game, and then I'll just, but it all just leaves.
Back to the death mechanics, you have three lives. The lives are very plainly given to you when you die. It's like, this is how many lives you have left. But for some reason, they never tell you on your very intricate inventory screen.
It was a little
a little odd.
It was a little weirdly worded. I thought for a second, I got confused because it's
yeah,
it's labeled as player three,
we will
player
talk about
two,
the terrible
player
localization
one
of this.
Well,
it worked. Right.
It just confused me for a second. And then, you know, I went, okay, well, obviously there's not three players. You know? And then I died and it's like player two. I'm like, okay, so that's your lives.
Say, leading into terrible localization, but, oh,
well,
game
over. When you get a game over, when you lose all your lives, you still respawn immediately where you were, but you lose all your experience and hearts, which is a large amount of your progress in this game.
Although you keep all the items you bought, right?
Yes.
I feel like that's a larger representative, because you can invest hearts in items, basically. So.
Yeah. It does make it a huge pain in the ass where you only have one life, and you get to town, and you're running to the shop or the church, and it's a horrible night to have a curse. That is pretty irritating.
Yeah. But the fact that they leave you with all of your stuff, that does make the economy of recharge a much better thing. Yeah, you have to level up again, but
well,
you've got all your crap.
You keep your level. If you've leveled up, you maintain that too, but you lose any experience towards your next level.
So I suppose we might want to explain the fact that you do have levels in this game.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that we haven't touched on yet that I think this is one of the first games along with next week's game that have ever really tried this.
This is a really complicated game for the NES, and it's kind of hard to notice that because it's also sort of short. Not short for an NES game, but short by any modern standard. They pack a lot of content into it.
Actually, it's about normal for modern day games.
Okay. Well, I beat it in 5.5 hours, but I got the worst ending, and the ending is based on time.
I beat Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 in about 5.5 hours.
Yeah,
or no, it was COD Blops. It was COD Blops 2. Same thing.
I've put like 20 hours into FTL and still haven't beaten it. So
see, that's what I would prefer. I've got 32 hours in the recent Fire Emblem Awakening, but that's more of choice than anything else.
But Faster Than Life has permadeath.
Yeah.
And that's a large part of that.
It's still got you coming back, doesn't it?
That's true.
So, this is one of the first graphical adventure games that had, like, actual on-screen sprites and stuff. And you had to, like, collect items and use them to unlock other areas and stuff. And it's really actually not a bad concept.
And power up. You level up, as I said. Enemies sometimes drop hearts, which in addition to being currency and ammo for the more powerful weapons, when you get hearts, you also get experience points. Although, as you level up, you stop getting experience points for weaker enemies.
Okay, that makes sense. So they do kind of a drop-off system.
I
gotta say, with the whip, the short time I played it, I did feel a little bit like Indiana Jones.
It is pretty awesome, and you do get better whips as you go through the game.
Yeah,
so.
Like I said, you don't get the whip power-ups like you did in Castlevania, but you can invest your hearts in stronger and stronger whips. You start with a regular whip. The flail? Is that
thorn,
the second one? Oh, yeah, thorn whip.
But you can usually skip the thorn whip because you get the flail pretty quickly.
Then the flail, then the chain whip, then the morning star, and last is the flame whip.
So basically, you start off in town and are given no direction other than the NPCs give you hints.
Kind of,
yeah. The problem with the game is, as you get into different towns, a lot of the NPCs will give you spurious information that doesn't help you in any way.
And the hints are terrible because they're A, translated poorly, and a lot of times NPCs will refer to locations, and they're good hints, like, you need to kneel at Deborah Cliffs to progress. But you don't know where Deborah Cliffs are, because unlike later games like Symphony of the Night, there's no label that tells you where you when you come to a new area.
And there's no map in this game, is there?
No.
Every other game, whenever you walk into a certain area, a lot of the exploration games, when you walk into an area, it'll come up with, like, at the top of the screen or whatever. At least one of the ones I've tell you where you are.
That's on the game I'm working on, a mini map, and one of those little things that comes up and tells you what area you're in are like the first two things I did outside of character movement.
They should be. Well, developers, if you're building an exploration game, first things, mini map, and tell us where the hell we are.
Yeah, mini map is goddamn essential.
Although I think some of these old games thought, hey, it's an adventure, like in D&D, you'll make your own map. And while I think that's a bit of an oversight, I think it's okay. And I think games like this and Metroid taught you, no, you need to provide a map for people.
Well, see, Metroid, I felt a lot more okay with it because if you go from left to right in Metroid, you always end up in the same spot. In this game, if you go right while up or right while down, you end up in two different places.
Okay, that's true.
And that's really my biggest problem. If they had made these separations more obvious and let me know that I was going to be going to entirely different areas, that would have been okay.
To clarify what Tyler is saying, sometimes on a path there will be a vertical divide, and if you go up or down, you go to a different area. So it's sort of clear what's going on, but it is a little hard to map.
So on my first playthrough, I went down the first time going to one of the screens and ended up at the entrance to a dungeon, and I thought I was going to town, and I kept going thinking I was still walking to town and ended up in an entirely different area. I'm like, where the hell am I? And I got really lost and died.
I think that just defines the Castlevania experience with this game is I got really lost and died.
See, that's never a problem in any other Castlevania. It's really just this one. This was not anything like Castlevania other than you jumped the same and had the same weapon.
The controls are lifted straight from Castlevania, as are the enemies.
Well, kind of.
It feels less thematic, and I think we'll get to that a little later.
He's got the weirdest gravity.
Yeah,
ever.
Did you notice? So Jeremy has mentioned the matrimony and jump arc problem. Well, not really a problem thing that happens in Castlevania. When you jump, if you are currently moving, you cannot, like, alter your jump arc at all.
I didn't notice that, but...
Like,
do you not normally try to alter your jump arcs midair in platformers?
Like, Mega Man allows you to change direction when the
Think I've discovered why you don't like platformers.
You can?
Yeah, most games let you. This one doesn't.
This is the exception to the rule.
I don't feel like I usually do, because usually I'm not trying to land behind where I'm going. I usually have it angled so that I'm landing where I want to land.
Yeah, but you can adjust midair, and sometimes you need to.
Mega Man was originally known for the fact that he had instant acceleration and could modify your jumps any way you wanted in midair. There is no momentum in Mega Man. Mario, on the other hand, has momentum, so you can modify your jumps in midair, but not as effectively as you could in Mega Man.
And in Castlevania, you can't at all.
Yeah, in Castlevania, you can't at all, and it's something that took a lot of getting used to playing the first one.
When you walk off of a platform, he just stops solid and falls straight down.
Yeah, he loses all momentum when just falling off of things, too, which is awkward.
I lost the word. I couldn't remember what the word was for when it's momentum.
So yeah, basically you go around collecting items, defeating dungeons to collect parts of Dracula. Do you actually fight Dracula at the end?
You do! You have to resurrect him and fight him. As you collect parts of Dracula, there are also power-ups, sorta. The first is his rib, which is a Zelda-style shield, where if you're not moving, you'll block stuff.
Neat.
The second is the heart, which you need to talk to a ferryman with the heart equipped to get somewhere, and that's all it does. It's terrible. I think third is the eye, which lets you see secret, the hidden books.
Oh yeah, by the way, don't you need to use holy water to find a lot of things?
Not a lot of things, but holy water, will travel through pits. There are false walls and false floors in this game. Are you amused, Zach?
Use holy water to find holes.
Yep.
I'm sorry, it's making me giggle.
There are false walls and false floors in this game, and the holy water will detect them. They'll just pass through. There are also blocks that can only be destroyed by holy water. Or Dracula's nail, if you equip that, your whip will also destroy those.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, kind of. You can just use the holy water instead, but...
Well, yeah, but the holy water has a slightly different attack path.
Yeah.
So...
And then Dracula's ring lets you get into Castlevania.
Sweet.
But you also need the cross from the Medusa.
You know, that sounds kind of like a kiddie park. Castlevania.
Yeah, I would go there.
That's actually the name of Dracula's castle in these games, isn't it?
Yeah.
What was it actually called in the book? Do you guys remember?
Castle Dracula.
Yeah, it was Castle Dracula.
That's what I thought.
Because it was Count Dracula's castle.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, and it sounds a heck of a lot better than Castlevania for a castle title. For a game title, not so much.
Well, I think it was because the first game was obviously, we had mentioned this before, was trying to be a B-movie themed ripoff thing. And Castlevania really sounds like the title of a B-movie, and I think that's why they were doing it, but...
Well, now, Castlevania sounds like a B-movie.
It's just called Dracula's Castle in Japan, or Devil Castle Dracula. Castlevania Dracula X in Japan is Devil Castle Dracula Rondo of Blood.
Was there, a localization thing when somebody had that copyrighted or something that they had to change it?
I think it was just Castlevania they thought sounded cool.
Yeah, it was basically a bunch of Americans going, Man, what sounds awesome? Castlevania.
They might not have wanted to put Devil because Nintendo was anal about that early on.
Indeed.
Well, I remember there were a lot of things that people didn't want to put that in mainstream media for a long time.
And Dracula's Castle does not have the same ring as Castlevania, even if it does make a decent game title. Mylon's Secret Castle, terrible game. Castlevania, awesome game.
What else do we want to say about this game?
I feel like I've just scratched the surface. I have so much I could say about this game.
Please do.
We talked about how there's no way to figure out where you want to go, and I want to compare that to Metroid, which is also an open explorer game. One of the brilliant things Metroid does, and we talked about this on the episode, you start and you can progress right or left. If you've played NES games before, your natural inclination is to progress right, and you can advance about 2 screens before you get stuck.
And it forces you to go back and go get the morph ball.
If you go left, because you're genre savvy or you've played it before, you get the morph ball, which lets you progress further. This teaches you both, A, sometimes you need to go other directions, and B, it's okay to backtrack. The difference is in Castlevania, you can go right or left, and you can get quite a ways both ways before you figure out, I don't know where I'm going, or these enemies are way too tough.
Although you need a lot of hearts, so...
Well, no, you can just go left in Castlevania. You can go left quite a ways.
Yep.
The enemies are way tougher, but you don't necessarily know that.
That's actually what I did the very first time I played, and then almost died, got back to town, healed, and then proceeded to die again later. I actually think that the way Metroid does this better is not necessarily, well, okay, I guess you made a really valid point with that, but in addition, Metroid, you don't need to do anything specific to advance. You have things you need to destroy with certain items, but it's pretty obvious which items you need to use after a little bit of experimentation. There aren't, like, these ridiculously complicated things you wouldn't ever know without, like, talking to all the villagers and...
Yeah, crouching in a specific spot on a specific screen that you're not even entirely certain which one it is.
None of them are difficult. They're just opaque.
Yeah, no, that's the problem. They're so obtuse, you don't have any freaking...
They're moon logic puzzles.
Exactly. Metroid doesn't have any of that, and that's why I think it succeeds as an exploration game where this game kind of faltered. I feel like if the clues had been a little bit more well-placed in this, it would have been a lot better.
Or if they were intelligible. The localization has something to answer for. The game is not amazing, even in the original, because a lot of the villagers just say random stuff that's not helpful, and the dialogue is still super, super slow, but at least they could tell, oh, okay, I need to crouch somewhere.
Yeah, so then you try crouching everywhere.
Another thing about this game, we touched on the day-night cycle a little bit.
I gotta say, that was ambitious for the NES, and actually pretty cool in my opinion.
Yeah, it was actually pretty cool. I like that.
I have two problems with it. One, the problem everybody knows, the very slow scrolling text that comes up.
Okay, every time!
That is a pain in the ass.
I'm probably going to put a link right here that is a GIF of that happening and make you, the listener, watch that.
If you warned them, what is wrong with you? You warned them.
No, I'm actually going to put the link just before where we'd actually be talking about it. So they're like, we're going to be talking about this in a few seconds. You should watch it so you know what we're talking about. And then I'm going to trap them. And then they're going to be listening to this part and curse me.
It will be a terrible night for you to have a curse.
It will.
High five.
Second, I feel it's a little underutilized and... I think this is just because werewolves are one of the first enemies you encounter. At night, enemies take twice as many hits.
Okay.
Which, okay, fair enough. But it would have been really cool if some of the enemies changed.
Yeah.
Like, if
it's
they were just
skeletons.
Dudes.
Don't they also do double damage?
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
Okay. I don't think they did double damage. I do know that one of the villages I found at night.
Yeah,
and I was
at night they're closed because they're zombies.
So those were supposed to be zombies? I wasn't sure if they were supposed to be zombies or witches or something. Because they were weirdly animated. They all look vaguely, I don't know why I associated them with female, but I thought they were like female, I thought they were witches.
I can see that.
Yeah, no, they look like banshees or something to me, so.
They didn't look like zombies to me, but.
I just assumed zombies.
I'm pretty sure they are zombies. They look like the zombies from the first one.
Not directly related to the day-night cycle, but it makes me think of it. I really like both songs in this game. That said, there are only 2 songs in this game. One that plays during the day and one that plays during the night. And it doesn't take too long for them to get old. I think there's also a mansion theme. There is, now that I think about it. So 3. And they're all good songs, but there are only 3 of them. They get old.
Yeah, it's kind of the problem. It doesn't matter. You might have the most epic, awesome song in the world. But when you gotta listen to it, assume it was a 50-50 split. You have to listen to it for 2.25 hour. No.
And given that most video game music is like
2 hours and 45 minutes.
A minute loop.
A piece.
Yeah. But you need to link to, Vanquish the Horrible Night, which is the PowerGov cover of the night theme, because I could listen to that for 2 hours on loop.
God-awful peripheral.
But there's, like, no town-specific music. None of the mansions are themed, so...
That's another thing. You talked about how Castlevania really wanted to be like a B-movie, and at the end of every level, the first level was a bat, and the second level was Medusa, but after that, you fought Frankenstein and mummies, and these horror movie icons. This game has three bosses, two in the last two dungeons in Dracula. The first is Death, who you can just walk past. Death took me 4 hours to beat in Castlevania, and that is one of my favorite video game fights. And this game, you walk by him!
You know what's awesome? You played Symphony of the Night, right?
Yeah.
That first scene where Death totally kicks your ass. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Nonsense. You know what it was? Death was still recovering after he twisted his ankle.
Well, to be fair, this is a direct sequel, and you did, according to the story, only beat Dracula a couple months ago. So Death is probably recovering from his embarrassing defeat earlier at your hands. So
they try to incentivize you fighting them by giving you the best weapon for killing him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I never used it, because it takes two hearts.
Oh.
But it does twice as much damage as the Flame Whip, has dagger range, and hit stun.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
That is a great weapon, actually, for two hearts, but...
The second boss is Floating Medusa Head. So easy. All she does is shoot fireballs or do this little circle pattern. You can sit out of the circle pattern, and Dracula's rib, which you have to get to her, blocks the fireballs.
Sweet.
Yeah, you have to beat her because she gives you the cross, which isn't a weapon in this game, but you need it to beat the game, and it never tells you that. And you can also just walk by her.
Oh, but you need to beat her to get the cross?
Yeah.
That's lame. That should not be possible to do.
Yeah.
But
well, it goes back to the same thing as Ghosts and Goblins. You need the shield, but you have to find the shield, but they never tell you need the shield.
Well, it does tell you if you get there without it, at least. In this, I don't think it would tell you if you got to Dracula's castle, oh, by the way, you need the cross. I don't think it does that.
There is a villager who tells you the cross is in X mansion is necessary, but...
Oh, does he?
But I think he says the cross, which is guarded by Dracula's servant in mansion, is necessary, and that's all, not what it's necessary for.
Or what servant is guarding it.
But damn it, you know it's necessary.
And then you go to Castlevania. It's kind of lame, honestly. There are no enemies there. You get to the back. Dracula's there. You have to go down a bunch of stairs to get to him.
Don't you have all of his pieces in a bag?
Well, yeah, you throw it on the altar.
And then he resurrects.
And then you fight Dracula, which I'm told if you let the fight start, his pattern is pretty hard, but you have hit stun in this game, so you can just hit him where he stands, and he's stunned, and then you whip him, whip it good, and then you get the ending.
Wow.
Back to Metroid, there are three endings for this game.
Really?
Yeah, which are based on how quickly you beat it and how many days, and you have a day counter on the pause screen.
Oh, kind of like Metroid.
So how exactly did yours end? Because you said you were just barely on the...
I get the worst ending, both of you die. Dracula is never seen again, but you expire in the fight.
Lame.
The middle ending is you defeat Dracula, but...
He comes back?
Well, like, after 2 weeks, you succumb from your wounds,
uh-oh,
and a new hero needs to rise.
Isn't that what actually happens in the series?
I believe that's the canon ending.
Okay. Oh,
the best ending is you just beat Dracula and it's awesome and you have a party.
aren't endings 2 and 3 pretty similar? Because either way, you're still dead.
Well, no, yeah, but...
The best... Yeah, pretty much. But in the second one, you get to live longer.
Yeah, also
you're
in the
still dead.
Also in the second one, Dracula comes back later because you didn't kill him properly.
Wouldn't the worst ending be better than the second
ending?
You
are remembered as a brave hero forever.
Because, you know, this is pedantic as hell. I acknowledge that. But in the third ending, the worst ending, he never comes back. But in the second ending, he gets better.
I think all the endings are satisfying. The second one is way more sequel bait.
Well, yeah, I'm just pointing out that the worst ending is not actually the worst ending.
And now every the Castlevania canon is every 100 years, Dracula comes back with his castle.
And sometimes sooner based on stuff happening, but yeah, Usually every 100 years.
Sometimes, you know, Symphony of the Night, Shaft resurrects him.
Yeah.
they
bored with the Belmont, so Dracula's son goes and beats him.
No, it's because Rickard is hypnotized to help restore Dracula.
Oh.
That's why the worst ending in Castlevania, or Symphony of the Night, is you kill Richter Belmont.
Oh.
And you stop the resurrection, but you never find out who was behind it, and you have this dissatisfied feeling because you killed Richter Belmont.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
I never got that ending. I just beat Dracula to death. So
well, that's the best ending. Although it's kind of hard to find in Symphony of the Night.
Is it? What did you have to do? Because
you have to get the two rings and then wear them in the clock tower, which at least in that game, every item has a description. And the one ring's description is where ...
Yeah.
And the other one is the clock tower with the dots in the right place. So at least there is a hint, but...
Yeah, I just figured that out on my own. I didn't know that was like a secret thing.
Some people just don't figure it out, because you can get through the game without finding either ring.
Yeah, but I was neurotic about getting all the items.
So was I.
So.
And I'm sure we'll get to that one eventually.
It's much better than this. It's like if this game was good. I say that about a lot of games, but we'll get there. Like, Mega Man X is like if Mega Man 2 was good.
I think Mega Man 2 is good, but Mega Man X is way better.
Yeah.
It's mediocre. I said that ad nauseum on the last one, so I don't need to go back into that. You know, this one got very much a bad rap, especially as Jeremy said on last week's episode. You guys all probably remember him hyping this as the doom of the podcast.
Well, I didn't want to play it on Friday, so I just watched a whole bunch of media on it. It's the first Angry Video Game Nerd episode. This is the one that made him make 100 episodes of bad NES games he doesn't like. It's the first episode of Egoraptor's Sequelitis.
Well, the thing is, I looked at this game. I played a little bit of it, and it was more of inertia and me being having a particularly lazy week. I don't know that I would say that this is like such a god-awful game. I mean, the mechanics worked. It's a little obtuse. That's a problem.
No, hell, it's not even the worst game we played for this podcast.
No, it's not.
I think it's in the better half, honestly.
It's better than F-Zero. It's better than...
Yeah, it is better than F-Zero. So.
I know you really enjoyed it, but I... Actually, no, wait. I can't in good conscience say it was better than the original Link, our original Zelda.
No,
but it's
Zelda
much better than it's much better than Ghosts and Goblins. And as much as it pains me to say this, I think it was better than Ogre Battle. But that's because Ogre Battle's interface was just so bad.
In conclusion, what I would say is it's not a good game. But if you're at all interested in gaming history or game development, it's a game you have to play. The ways in which it is bad must be avoided at all costs. Because under that, it's a good game.
Yeah, it's actually pretty fun, even though it screws you over pretty intentionally, but it's actually pretty fun. And I feel like basically every adventure game, games in which you had to collect items to defeat a boss and explore places, borrow a lot from this. Although I think this borrowed a lot from the original Zelda, or Metroid even, so.
More Metroid than Zelda. It came out a year after Metroid. And 2 years after Zelda, so.
That said, this was also simultaneously released with next week's game that did a lot of similar things but was reviled for being a better game. So.
Well, before we get into that, we're missing the last little chunk here. What would we do to make it better?
Oh, wow. This is a long list.
I would make the text scroll way faster. I would take out the villagers who said nothing. I would condense the towns a little bit so they were easier to navigate. And I would make the hints intelligible. That's all you have to do, really.
I would also remove Insta-Death from Fallen in Pits, because I don't think that belongs in an exploration game. I would not take out the villagers that did nothing but change what they said. They could be useless villagers.
But actually appear to be useless?
Yeah, obviously useless villagers that say, like, I'm having a good day, or something like that.
I think the problem with that is you run the risk of players thinking all villagers are useless after they talk to one or two and don't get a hint.
I have yet to do that with Final Fantasy games, and I still talk to everyone, so...
You even talk to the dog?
Yes, I do talk to the dog. He gives you something eventually.
Woof. Not sure what I expected.
He gives you one of Yuna's summons.
What I do is I just add the mini-map, the map,
oh, yeah,
and then
map.
Give me a little
Huge.
Bit of a hint as to where to go to start.
Well, I think part of that could be solved by having non-useless villagers. Having villagers who said useful things be the only ones who obviously say useful things.
Or color them differently. That would be an easy way to do it.
That's what I think I would do.
I think Zelda 2 does that, actually.
Especially that way you key the player on, you know, they talk to a couple of them and... These ones colored in green are actually giving you hints. The ones colored in brown are like...
Fluff.
I'm having a good day.
Or give you, like, backstory about the area, but...
It's a good day to not be cursed.
Yeah, that, I would also make that text skippable. Skippable as...
At least, if not speed them all.
Something I forgot that does need to be fixed. After the first city, all the shops are hidden. Like, you go in, and there's no one's there, and you have to throw holy water at a random block to get to the guy. And that's bullcrap.
I agree. You shouldn't hide progress in the game. You should hide optional progress.
No game should hide mandatory content from a player.
Unless it's, like, locked in some way. Like, you obviously need this item to go through. But if it's just, like, hidden, how are you supposed to know?
That's not hiding mandatory content. You need an item to get it, to go through it. You go find the item. The item shouldn't be extremely well hidden.
Well, you put it behind a big wall that says you need this to get through. That's what Metroid does. So... You need the missiles to get through the red doors. It, like, almost does the big sign on the door, literally.
Like Condemned it. You need this brand of sledgehammer to knock this door open.
All right, anything else about Castlevania 2?
It's got a much worse rap than I think it deserves.
Yeah.
It was well-liked when it came out. It got good reviews. It was considered a little obtuse,
A little?
Yeah.
What do they consider majorly obtuse?
Mylon's secret castle.
I actually...
Is that a secret to everyone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, I could see this being an okay game back when it came out, but it came out in what, 86? 87? So, you know, what we had to compare it to was like Zelda, Mario.
Zelda 2.
Metroid. Kind of Zelda 2 a couple months earlier.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think this is a bad game by those standards, and it's not a terrible game by modern standards, but it's also not great. So,
at the very least, it had some kind of imagination driving it, unlike the cookie-cutter shooters that I've been playing.
It's one of my favorite games we played, just because Castlevania, which I played in 2012, so this isn't nostalgia, is my favorite NES game. Castlevania Symphony of the Night, which I also played in 2012, is exactly the game I wanted to play and make in 1999. And I can see very clearly how Castlevania became Castlevania 2, and how Castlevania 2 becomes Symphony of the Night.
Indeed. This game, I'm not sure if this was intentional or not, feels like the pattern for so many games that came since. In addition to, you know, all the Castlevania games, there are a lot of games that follow this pattern, although I might blame Metroid for more of that, so I don't know. It's an okay game.
Blame, I think, can be evenly spread between the two.
It had inspirational, revolutionary concepts for the time. So,
well, the RPG elements?
Yeah.
People are hailing those now as a revolutionary concept.
That's because they're awesome. More games need to have them.
Damn near 30 years later.
Alright, so speaking of RPG elements, we wanted to play this game back-to-back with another game. One that, at the time, was not so highly thought of because it was so different, but didn't influence the later games at all, and is sometimes looked back of as sort of a weird black sheep, because it's not a bad game.
Yep. Next week's game, that actually came out 3 months before this one, so we assume that they were in concurrent development, is Zelda 2, Link's Adventure.
The Adventure of Link, thank you.
Yeah, well, I prefer English-isms and not
Japanese-isms.
Is
that where he first got his name?
I don't know. Is Link a default name in the NES version?
That's actually a good question. I thought he got it from Link to the Past, but this is called Link's Adventure. I don't know. We might have to look that up. I'll let you know when we post that episode.
It's available on the Wii Virtual Console, as always. It, also, if you have that GameCube special disc, it's
like
on
I
there.
Do.
I feel like there was another release of it, too, but I can't think of where.
Maybe it's on the 3DS. I think, come to think of it, I think it's on the 3DS.
I know, we have one sitting here. We could probably look it up, but I'll leave that as an exercise to the listener. So
I don't think it is, because I think all the Game Boy Zeldas are on that, but that was all. I could be wrong.
So,
next time on Last Time, Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link.
I am Error. This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games. Copyright 2013.
All of the video games and other media mentioned herein is copyright of its respective owners. That may not be obvious.
Contact us at ltlvg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. And if you want to contact one of us individually, I am Zach@lasttimeonvideogames.com.
Tyler@lasttimeonvideogames.com.
Or Jeremy, Jeremy@lasttimeonvideogames.com.
You can visit our show page if you don't want to hit the blog at gplus.2/lasttimeonvideogames.
If you do want to visit the blog, lasttimeonvideogames.com.
And we've got an RSS feed. You should probably click on it, or one of the other buttons on there.
We're also on iTunes.
And the Twitters.
Twitter is @LTOVG.
Unlike all the games we play on this show, we cannot be emulated.